this whole process has been something that all of us in PFLAG commend you for. So, and we know it's difficult, and we're happy to see you so happy. Good. So I'm now retired from Case Western Reserve University. I'm a psychologist. I worked there for about 34 years. Most all of them, I was the counseling center director for students. And my background is in college counseling and counseling psychology. I purposely kind of went in that direction of counseling psychology because I wasn't so certain that I wanted to be a clinical psychologist in a hospital setting, diagnosing people. I wanted to actually try to find what helps people think of themselves in transitional moments of despair, depression, anxiety, but also think about themselves developmentally. Like, where can they get to? Where do they want to? What do they aspire? Where do they want to go in life? And I think it was such a perfect match. I'm so glad that I found some experiences at Penn State, University of Florida, University of Iowa, and then coming here to Cleveland. So a couple of things about my work there. I was trained, as were most of the counseling psychologists at the time, to think, one, about developmentally about the individual. That is, we are not all, we grow into who we are. And we're sometimes affected by negative experiences in life, but that we can, in a positive psychology, kind of work through them and get to a better place. But they also taught us that we can't just wait in a counseling center on a college or a university setting for people to come to us. We had to go out to them. And so this very shy and anxious guy, me, who hated to stand in front of people and talk publicly, I turned all shades of red when I was much younger, and I wanted to try to avoid public speaking whenever possible. But I became, I think what helped me get over it is I had a purpose for it, and that is that we need to go out and speak about mental health, adaptation, positive things in life, and help people. And that's why I get it that you build communities this way. So it's not just going to a clinic, but it's also actually going out and helping the community ponder and think about how they can improve and how they can embrace people that are marginalized, discriminated against, people who just need to be lifted up. And you do so by also doing some things in the community that you won't necessarily make a great salary from. Perhaps you'll do pro bono work, you know, and it's a commitment when you join nonprofits, or when you do the work that you're doing in this church. So, with that in mind, I also want to tell you just a little bit about PFLAG itself. So PFLAG got started. Even before it crystallized into the term PFLAG, which used to represent parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays. So that's sort of the an initial kind of effort that was there. But it took the pride of a mother in New York City, Jean Manford, in 1972, I think it was, to march in a gay pride parade in support of her gay son. She knew what I think many came to know is that love for our children, I think, really comes first, no matter what who they find themselves loving when they get older or in their lives. So she took that moment, and all of a sudden, people began to ask some questions like, where are the parents? The parents started coming out of the closet, and then helping and supporting in a more public way. Now, if you remember, if you're old enough, this was not an easy time. In Florida, Anita Bryant was, a spokesperson for the citrus industry. But she was also very outspoken about gay rights, opposing it. And the American Psychiatric Association American Psychological Association. We're sort of late in moving toward acceptance and destigmatizing and actually unclassifying homosexuality as a disorder or disease. So it took some time even for the professions to catch on, but Jean Manford in 1972 had the courage and the conviction to march down a street for her son. That's kind of started it all. Today, it has developed into a national organization. I think there are probably over 400, actually there are some international chapters of PFLAG, and they have kind of this mission and advocacy kind of thing, and I want to just make sure that you knew just a little bit about it. We'll watch a video here in a moment, but PFLAG is a nonprofit, and we support people, and that's our primary effort to try to support families. And my work, as I have known it to be over many years, in starting PFLAG with Jane Daroff in Cleveland, is to see this as a free mental health group for community members. So it's not unusual. Sometimes we'll see great joy in a session of people coming to this group, and I'll tell you more about the group, but also a lot of despair and past depression or anxiety. So we provide support, advocacy. That is, we go out sometimes and we'll join people in an annual march, or we'll advocate in some fashion in the community, but we'll also get involved with some training sessions. And so that we're currently training pediatric residents at the University Hospitals and Metro Health. So they come to one of our sessions and we help them understand how sometimes very curative telling our story can be in terms of health as well, psychological well-being. So PFLAG got started here in Cleveland in 1985, so we're about to celebrate our 35th anniversary next year in 2020. And it got started when Jane Daroff, a social worker and also a colleague of mine at Case Western Reserve, after she finished her master's degree, by the way, her young adult kids moved out of the house and moved on in their lives, and she decided, I'm going back for my social work degree. So she took time for herself to develop her professional identity. And when she graduated, her middle son, who is gay, said, Mom, you have to start a PFLAG, and I'll help you do that. And that was in 1984, coming into 1985. And she tells the story that she thought, okay, well, if we're going to do it, I'm just going to nudge Jess Sellers and get him to come along for a little while. And we both talked about it, like, okay, maybe we'll make a commitment to doing this group for a couple years, maybe if it even got off the ground. We were uncertain about it. Trinity Cathedral in downtown Cleveland was one, I think, like the 12th or 15th church that was approached to see if they would allow us to meet there. And everyone else, for free, I should say, everyone else turned us down except for Trinity Cathedral. So in 1985, in July, we got started. And we've been going ever since. And we have monthly meetings. We meet in a room very much like this, in a way, with a circle of chairs. Our average number of attendees per month in this meeting is around the upper 20s. Sometimes it gets as large as 40 some. So it's somewhere in there. And each month we meet, we'll have 6 to 8 new people. Now the key thing, I think, is the kind of healing that goes on when somebody can tell their story. And very briefly, we've been at this so long that we have heard some of these stories. very compelling ones. So one that comes to mind is a woman who was dragged literally kind of into this meeting by her best friend. And her best friend said, you have to come to this. You and your daughter have to work this out. And so this friend brought this mom to a meeting. And the mother sat in silence the whole time. Her friend kept saying, I'm here to help her, but she wouldn't speak. At the end of the meeting, and this is going to be a little shocking, but I usually ask, what did you think of tonight's meeting, or what do you, how did it go? And I ask everyone who is new for the first time there. And this woman, the mother, who didn't speak the entire time, and we meet for about an hour and 45 minutes, said, "I wish my daughter were dead." And it was a gasp. There was just a literal gasp in the room from parents and all of us, because you never really know what you're going to hear. And I leaned over to Jane and I said, "That's where she's beginning." We had to trust that the first thing she needed to do was talk about mourning and the loss of the child she thought her daughter would be. It's not easy, but that was her beginning. And her friend brought her back in subsequent months, again, kind of pulling her into the room. But it was probably about 6 months into it, maybe 10 months into it. And she began to warm up. She talked more. She was making those developmental stages from mourning and loss to acceptance and love. And the statement of love that came from her that we'll never forget is that she said, "I'm looking forward to my daughter coming home. We're going to go Christmas shopping together." When you hear that, and just 6 to 8 months before you hear, daughter dead to me, you realize the significance of helping people work through their hurt, their despair, again, in a developmental kind of way, right? You're all sort of involved right now in this process, I think, of understanding and wanting to learn. You're here because you have an openness about, I think, learning and diversity and trying to understand some things. So later we'll have a good Q&A about, and you can ask me any questions you might like. Because I think education, remember, it's sort of, it's support, education, and advocacy. The role of PFLAG volunteers go out to do these kind of things. I wanted to show you, first say that PFLAG, the group itself is very much like listening to, I don't know how many of you listen to NPR on Friday mornings, WCPN or WKSU, and there's something called StoryCorps. Does that resonate or connect with you? So these are typically about 3 to 5 minute at the most kind of narratives, typically of two people. And they reflect on a very meaningful, life-changing event typically. And they talk to one another and they reflect on where they've been. So there's a great deal of reflection goes on, and it's so powerful. How many of you have listened to NPR, StoryCorps? Yeah, you probably have, a number of memorable moments. Even I think they still call them driveway moments. Or you're driving to work, and you're listening to it, and all of a sudden you're sort of bursting out into tears, because it's an intense moment of listening to people tell their stories, and you can't even see them, which is really fascinating. It's just what you hear. That's how it is for us in this group in PFLAG. So we'll be in this group of maybe 35 some people, and we take special care of those who are there for the first time. So So hi, I'm from PFLAG Cleveland, and we're talking about what it's like to be in that group or self-help support group. So I wanted to show you a little video that Larry's going to help me get started here. And this is from, I just want to see what you think, because it's sort of a visual and auto, a visual of what I'm talking about in terms of the power of StoryCorps and the power of parents coming out.
He was about 19, freshman in college.
He came into my bedroom one night crying and said, "I have to tell you something."
I was surprised because she had been dating men forever.
I was not the ideal father when Brad and I first had that conversation.
It took me a little while, and I think partly because I was afraid for him.
He would like to think that we would be further along than we are. And I think the support of loved ones and family and friends and people who have been on the journey can make the difference between life and death.
The coming out process isn't just about the child, the person who's gay. It's also for the parents.
The key for supporting your child is actually coming out yourself. That's the huge piece. Coming out on Facebook saying, "I'm proud of my son, he's gay," or "My daughter, she's a lesbian and I love her and I'll support her forever." That's what your child really wants to hear. When they hear that, you got them.
I don't think a child could do this that successfully without parent support, because we're the first people to be the teachers.
So she did this little poster for you. It says, "Dear Reed, I am so incredibly honored to be your mother. You are an amazing young man. You are not only very talented, but have great inner strength and character. I will always love you, Mom."
Bradley, we are so proud of who you are today and all you will be tomorrow.
And you are our superstar. Love, Mom, and Pops.
We love you madly, Bradley.
That's the same.
What's your name?
Bradley.
Me. That's me.
Yeah, this is pretty special. Do I get to keep this?
You are my heart. I love you beyond measure, and I just want to be on the journey with you wherever it takes you. And I'm super proud of your courage. Love you.
Jason, you are the light of our lives. We are very proud of you. You inspire us.
You are true joy. I love every aspect of who you are as a person, and I'm thankful every day that we've given the world you.
Coming out as your authentic self is scary and takes a lot of courage. You've got the strength to look for the people out there that can support you. So don't give up hope. You're special and you deserve to be loved.
Pretty powerful, and it's simply about coming out and supporting with loving statements your family. And family can be, by definition, a congregation, a school. It can be very, yeah, friends. Exactly. So this is what it's sort of about. And I was just sort of looking at Shade Tree's kind of statement here. "We're an inclusive and affirming community seeking to live out a more just and generous Christianity. All are welcome here." That's amazing. That's what love is, isn't it? Yeah, that's awesome. So I have a couple more things I think I could probably, you know, get to. And we do want to, like, have some Q&A time, but I will tell you about another story, and it's a sad one because the but it underscores, I think, the role that we can have. So Robbie Kirkland was about 16, I think, or 17 when he was St. Ignatius. He was struggling to come out as a gay young man. And his mother was aware of this, but parents were divorced at the time, and so father didn't know. But his mother, Leslie, began to explore ways to kind of try to help him. And a month or two before she was determined to come to our PFLAG meeting, Robbie committed suicide. It was there are many factors about trying to understand why that can happen. It was, in a sense, bullying from other kids, being perhaps in a school system that, really overtly and sometimes covertly and overtly sometimes spoke out against diversity at all kinds. There may be other reasons too that we may never know exactly why, but he took his life. Now, Leslie decided to bring purpose to her life that she would dedicate coming and being in our group for years, and that was really helpful, I think, for struggling family members. And so let me move forward to another story. So this is about an award that PFLAG gives, and we give two or three awards each year. And one of them is called the Bruce Creedy Award, a community award to kind of recognize someone in our community that has given back, gone the extra mile for some reason in helping to support LGBTQ individuals. And about 8 years ago, we gave the award to a school teacher who became aware of a struggling high school kid. And he disclosed to her that he was gay, and he was really having a hard time. He, like Robbie, I think, began to withdraw a lot. Parents didn't know what was going on, and eventually their son sat down with a school teacher and began to kind of work out the truth about this young man. It was touch and go. He admits that he was so depressed that he thought of suicide. And yet this one act of a very kind teacher helped to be catalytic in their lives, even though the parents struggled with it. It will be 2 years coming up in December when I went to a holiday party for Cleveland Clinic employees in one of the divisions of the Institute. And there were scores and scores of people there. But this handsome, tall guy came up to me and said, "Do you remember me?" And I thought, I don't know if I do, actually, but he reintroduced himself to me, and he said, "I am the guy that my parents were really struggling and having a hard time." And he said, "I'm now a resident at the Cleveland Clinic." And I just beamed and, just thought, oh yeah, that's so cool that he made it through this crisis of his. So I have always come to see and always thought that PFLAG in various communities across the country actually serve as a real good cornerstone of mental health care for individuals, as do other organizations like the LGBT Center of Cleveland and those here in what county I'm in, Lake, thank you, sorry. So I know that, it really matters when organizations and communities step forward to fill this role and offer it for free. Are we okay with taking a little break, and we'll come back for Q&A? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Good. So there are some desserts back here.
Thanks for that.
Keurigs over here. There's some cold drinks in the bin over here. Get it, and then come back and enjoy.